Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Pony Express.
There's never a good time to make a decision like this, honestly. It took a while, and maybe I was slow at that decision, but I finally came to it in the last few days. Made the decision that I want to find a better fit for this building. I want to find somebody, just looking forward, not talking about Mike here. I want a great strategic thinker. It's more than an Italian evaluation guy. This isn't a decision that I could have made at the end of the season. I could with Todd. I could not with Mike.
That's Christopher Johnson, the Jets' clueless CEO, to start off this hour of the Pony Express on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. The Jets continue to prove why they are one of football's biggest laughingstocks with this move. Not so much firing Mike Maccagnan, who thought Christian Hackenberg was a steal, a heist in the second round of the draft. Had an arranged marriage with Todd Bowles that produced zero playoff appearances and playoff wins. Not so much getting rid of Mike Maccagnan, but the timing of it and who the Jets are turning over the franchise to. Adam Gase, who has a losing record in his career in Miami. You saw him in the division twice a year. 23-25 as Dolphins head coach. Now he wins a power struggle in New York, and he's the de facto GM. But maybe hope is on the way. Maybe Jets fans who have waited now 50 years since their last championship, maybe there is a knight riding in on a white horse for them in the form of Peyton Manning. This comes from Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Title of the article, Rumors Fly of the Jets pursuing Peyton Manning. Florio writes, rumors are flying within league circles that the Jets may make a run at the future Hall of Fame quarterback, who has periodically been linked to NFL management possibilities. And Gase, who worked with Manning in Denver, possibly would be one of the few guys who could draw Manning back into football. Remember, a big reason why Adam Gase is the Jets coach in the first place is because Peyton Manning called the Jets and said, this man is a good coach. He will work wonders. He will do great things with Sam Darnold. So Peyton Manning has influenced the Jets' decisions here. And now some speculation, at least one NFL insider is saying, that the Jets want him. They're trying to hire him. But be careful what you wish for. I think we've discovered, we've learned here. We should have learned by now that great players do not usually make great coaches or great talent evaluators. Case in point, Magic Johnson. Coaching career with the Lakers. Personnel man with the Lakers. Neither one of those stories had a happy ending. How about Derek Jeter? Mr. Captain, Mr. Yankee. Buys into the Miami Marlins. Calling the shots with the Miami Marlins. How is that going? They traded an MVP, Christian Yelich. They traded a home run king, Giancarlo Stanton. They're on pace to lose 120 games. Hasn't worked for Derek Jeter. Hasn't worked for Magic Johnson. Ted Williams, as a manager with the Texas Rangers, had a losing record. Frank Robinson, the late Frank Robinson, had a losing record as a manager. You can go on and on and on. There are very few examples of successful players who made the transition to successful coach, successful GM, successful owner. Mario Lemieux, one of the few examples. He's won 3 Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh with the Penguins as an owner. But then you have Wayne Gretzky, who failed in Arizona as coach. So you can really go on and on. And I did this study before coming on the air today. I went and looked up the post-NFL careers of Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Every modern era quarterback. So I didn't include Otto Graham or, say, Sammy Baugh in this. But I just looked at guys who have played, really, since the 1950s on. And here's what I found. Most of them go into broadcasting. And I think Peyton Manning would be an excellent broadcaster. You see what Tony Romo is doing with CBS. I think Peyton Manning would be the perfect combination of insight and entertainment. We've seen how Manning has a knack for thinking on his feet in those situations, that there's a natural humor, that there's a funny side of Peyton Manning that comes out from time to time. He's hosted Saturday Night Live. I think he's done a pretty good job in that role. He's been great as a spokesperson, as a pitch man. He kills it. The nationwide commercials. So I think that would be just a brilliant transition for him. He could command probably up to $10 million a year. I mean, if John Gruden can get close to that in broadcasting, why can't Peyton Manning? Revered, respected, put him in the booth. And that's the route that most former great quarterbacks take. Troy Aikman, Dan Fouts, Terry Bradshaw, Warren Moon, Dan Marino, Kurt Warner, Len Dawson, Sonny Jurgensen, Steve Young, Fran Tarkenton, Johnny Unitas. They all went from the field to the broadcast booth. Now, a few guys just go through life and, you know, they've made enough money and they're successful enough where they can just kind of be themselves. Roger Staubach, Joe Montana. These are great quarterbacks who had investment opportunities, who let their money make money and never had to stay in football. I mean, Montana's a 49er for life and Staubach's a Cowboy for life, but they're not actively involved in football. They're just supportive. They're just there. They're just kind of team ambassadors. And then you have a class of quarterbacks, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, who decided, you know what? If I can play it, I can coach it. I can run a team. And what you find with those guys is that almost all of them, with the exception of one, have failed at that. Case in point, Bart Starr. Think about it. Bart Starr, before Bill Belichick came around, Vince Lombardi was the standard by which every NFL head coach was compared and evaluated and analyzed off of. Lombardi was the gold standard. Bart Starr was at the knee of Vince Lombardi, was around him. Think about all the football. You'd think everything from Vince Lombardi would have trickled down to Bart Starr. Now, here's Bart Starr for you in his NFL career as a coach. 56-76-2. Two winning seasons. One playoff win. In his 5 years as Packers GM, 26-47-1. This is Bart Starr. Learn from Vince Lombardi. The student couldn't come close to the teacher. How about Norm Van Brocklin? 13 years as an NFL head coach. 3 winning seasons in 13 years. Here's a name from the past. Bob Waterfield. Pro Football Hall of Fame quarterback. 3 years as Rams coach. 9-24-1. Really, only one guy has successfully transitioned from Hall of Fame quarterback to great coach or GM, and that's Elway. And you can even say now that Elway's career in Denver now is soured, that it's taken an ugly turn. Before the last couple of years, though, I mean, Elway delivered a championship. He took the Broncos to another Super Bowl. They went to the playoffs 5 straight years. Now, a lot of it had to do with Peyton Manning. He recruited Peyton Manning successfully to Denver. And so maybe Manning sees that, was a part of that, and thinks, maybe I can be John Elway. Maybe I can run an organization. Maybe I'm so intellectually superior. I know the game inside and out. I can build a championship team. I know Adam Gase. We have a relationship. I recommended him for this job. That went a long way. And he might think I have a quarterback. But I would be careful about that point. You know, you hear that, and this is pretty much true, you need a quarterback to win in this league. Very, very few times in NFL history, you can count them on one hand, where a team with a mediocre quarterback won a Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer, Nick Foles, Brad Johnson. I mean, there are very few instances of teams that won with mediocre quarterback play. So you need that to start. And, you know, there's a belief out there that Sam Darnold is a franchise quarterback because of where he was picked. He was the 3rd pick because of what he did in college. Let me just make this cautionary, not that Jets fans need it, but, you know, even for people that are thinking about betting on the Jets over this year because they signed Le'Veon Bell and C.J. Mosley, or, you know, just fantasy players who are starting their early prep work for the season, their early homework. Let me just say this about Sam Darnold, okay? He was 2nd in the league with 15 interceptions last year. Now, we've seen, I'll go back to Peyton Manning, he led the league in interceptions his rookie year, and then by his 2nd season, he was an MVP. So that's not always a harbinger of things to come. That's not always a predictive model, how many interceptions you throw as a rookie. But here is something that is very alarming with Darnold, okay? He took a ton of hits in college. He took a lot of sacks, and most of that was blamed on the offensive line. A lot of interceptions, most of it was blamed on the protection. I just wonder if Sam Darnold is going to be accurate enough and is going to make quick, precise decisions with the football at this level. Because I know the Jets' offensive line was not the world's best O-line, but he was still sacked last year, okay? He was sacked only 30 times. And that's not a big number when you think that Aaron Rodgers got sacked 49 times and Derek Carr went down 51 times. Quarterbacks that make much better decisions. So it's not like Darnold's year, 17 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, was the result of him always being under siege. You can't just make the blanket statement with him that he had a so-so rookie year because he had no offensive line and no weapons. It wasn't good. You think with a coach that has a quarterback background, not that he did anything with Tannehill, and with Le'Veon Bell, that Darnold will get better. But I'm not convinced. I'm not sold on him. I'm not buying low on Sam Darnold's stock. Let me put it that way. And if Peyton Manning doesn't take this job, to me, it is a sign that he's not a Darnold believer. Because at some point, Manning's going to get back into football. He's either going to buy a chunk of a team or he's going to take a John Elway-like position. It's going to happen. And if he doesn't do a good friend in Adam Gase a favor here, if he doesn't do him a solid, I think it's an indicator that he's not a believer in Sam Darnold. So we'll play it by ear and see what happens there with the Jets. Coming up this hour, folks, we've got we've got an unreal take. You'd think if you're on NFL Network, you're on one of these TV shows, and you're a former player, you think you're getting paid a lot of money. You better have some strong points and some really strong opinions. You better come with some stuff that makes people think, that's eye-opening, that teaches us something about the game. Later this hour, you are going to hear one of the worst opinions in the history of sports media, football media, and that's really saying something, given the state of affairs we have with all the crap that's out there now. But coming up next, something in sports that we all agreed on yesterday, that we all saw eye to eye on, and consensus in sports, like politics, almost never happens. Well, I found something. I dug that up from yesterday, and we'll talk about it next. 855-212-4CBS is the telephone number. That's 855-212-4227. On Twitter, at CBS Sports Radio and at the Pony Express, Pony spelled P-O-N-I. My name's Andrew Filippone. I'm based out of Pittsburgh. I do a show here 2 to 6, Monday through Friday. That's Eastern time. And I'm with you every Sunday right here, 10 to 2, 7 to 11 Pacific. It's the Pony Express on CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Pony Express.
That's right. Coming up later this hour, one of the silliest opinions from a former player, no less, that I've ever heard on TV or radio or podcast or in print, anywhere really. That will you will hear it for yourself coming up in about 15 minutes. But if I would be remiss here, I would be really missing out on a golden opportunity, and I would be doing a disservice to my audience, to you out there, the listeners that I adore and care about and appreciate so much, if we did not have a heart-to-heart discussion today about America's darling, America's favorite, Bodie Express, the horse at the Preakness yesterday that kicked its jockey off its back, coming right out of the paddock, right out of the gate here, and decided to run the Preakness on its own. And I noticed as soon as that happened, I had Twitter up on my phone, and universally, it seemed like sports fans, sports opinion makers alike were united in rooting for this horse to win, to do the impossible. The jockey, which is supposed to be there to make sure that the horse maintains a certain pace to start, has a closing kick, you know, the operator of the vehicle, so to speak. You know, that is, the jockey wins more than the horse. Or the jockey is responsible or helpful in the horse winning. I don't know how much credit you want to give jockeys, but they get paid, and it's a competitive industry, so you'd think they're not a dime a dozen. They're not totally disposable. So most of America, when they sat down to watch that race last night, really had no interest other than maybe their betting interest in that race, because all the Kentucky Derby stories had decided to sit out and watch the Preakness yesterday. It was one of the least interesting, least competitive events in horse racing history when it started. And by the end, it was one of my favorite all-time horse racing events. I've never in my life seen anything like that. My eyes were glued to a horse without a jockey. You had a tightly neck and neck, a packed race of horses that were right up against each other. It was a suspenseful race, but my eyes were not on the winner. It was on the horse without a jockey, Bodie Express, to which afterwards, Bob Baffert, who was a Hall of Famer, the trainer of American Pharoah, the last horse to win the Triple Crown, I was reading Tim Layden, who is the authority on horse racing. He's been writing about it forever for Sports Illustrated. And Baffert said this to Layden in Sports Illustrated on SI.com today of Bodie Express, quote, "You've got to be careful. Because some horses in that situation will try to win. Well, yeah. I mean, what is the hope? What are the other... What is everybody hoping for? That the horse, when the jockey gets thrown off, just says, oh, the hell with this. I'm going to, like, sit down and give up too? Like, I guess that's it for me. Show's over. I've got no chance. For the mob of fans, for the legions of horse racing fans who actually believe that horses are athletes, that they actually care, that they know when they win and they know when they lose, and that they are competitive species and they have clutch genes in them where they rise to the occasion, that they are motivated to win, that these horses, these animals are bred and wired and trained to compete, that there was ample reason for Secretariat to be ranked as one of the best athletes of the 20th century, which ESPN did, by the way. They ranked him ahead of Roberto Clemente. If there was ever a strong argument for the horses are athletes crowd, it was yesterday. Bodie Express was the biggest underdog with his jockey in this race. He was 70-1 at the Kentucky Derby. The horse has never won in its life in any event. It's never been in the winner's circle at any time. Doesn't matter what jockey's been on Bodie Express. He didn't win the Florida Derby or the Arkansas Derby or any of the tune-ups for this thing. He'd always been a bridesmaid. And they came around the back stretch there. And this horse without a jockey wasn't in last place. Which, if you are a jockey on a healthy horse that loses to a horse without a jockey, that should be the day you retire from the sport. If there was ever a reason to say, you know what, I lost my fastball here, I got to hang up my stupid jockey hat and my whip here and just say, this sport is not for me anymore. If any jockey had lost to Bodie Express yesterday, that to me is a pink slip waiting to happen. Because that horse would have rendered you irrelevant. Totally replaceable. So that was a sight to see, and it would have been bigger than a horse winning the Triple Crown if a jockeyless horse had won a leg of a Triple Crown. If what is the Preakness? Let's say the third or fourth biggest horse racing event of the year, Kentucky Derby, Belmont, depending on the year, and some horse racing aficionados might say the Breeders' Cup is bigger. If the horse without a jockey won the Preakness, slap that baby on Sports Illustrated, make it a number one story, take it out to stud for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I say just run the Belmont free of jockeys and just let every horse do its thing. Now, I know I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, so, the smart aleck horse racing nut can't... I don't want you to call in and say, well, Andrew, it was a threat to everybody's well-being. I get that. But in the moment, I wasn't freaking out and panicking, thinking, oh my God, these other horses and jockeys are in grave danger. I was rooting like mad for this horse to win. Because I think that horse racing is a pretty shady business as it is. And it would have been an all-time... It would have been one of the more embarrassing things in horse racing history for a horse without a jockey to win an event. But ultimately, it didn't happen. He did come in last place. But for about 60 seconds, I think all of America was rooting for Bodie Express. And I hope he runs in the Belmont, and I hope he runs without a jockey in the Belmont. But again, that probably won't happen. What a legendary... I mean, how about horse racing this year? Their two biggest moments are a 22-minute instant replay in a horse without a jockey. That's the state of horse racing in America, folks. That's where we're at. You don't think this sport is a laughingstock? It is. Speaking of laughing stocks, wait till you hear what one former NFL quarterback had to say about a Hall of Fame quarterback. You're going to hear coming up one of the silliest, most nonsensical opinions I have ever heard in my entire life of doing this. I've been in the sports media business now for almost 20 years. Wait until you hear this coming up. You can follow me on Twitter at the Pony Express. Pony spelled P-O-N-I. No, it's not because I'm a fan of the horses. It's because my last name is Filippone. You can follow us on Twitter at CBS Sports Radio. You can listen to us on Alexa. You can download the radio.com app for free and listen to us there. You can stream us at CBSSportsRadio.com.
This is the Pony Express.
And in 20 minutes from now, Kevin Durant, what's next for him? What does he need to do to restore his legacy, to restore his place in basketball's pantheon of great players? Plus, theories on tonight. Predictions on tonight, one of the biggest nights in the history of television as we know it. But right now, I want to talk about something that a former number one pick, a former NFL number one pick said on an NFL.com podcast. Now, I'm going to set this up the best I can. Dave Damashek, who used to write for Jimmy Kimmel, of all people, works for NFL Network and NFL.com as an entertainer, a guy that is going to give you a lighter side to football. And he does a podcast where all kinds of kind of zany, off the beaten path, fun football related topics get discussed. And on his podcast this week, he had David Carr and some dude with an English accent. I have no clue who the other guest was. But David Carr was on there to talk about the best quarterbacks in the Super Bowl era. That goes back to 1966. So in the last 50-plus years, the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. This is Dave Damashek's podcast, the Dave Damashek program on NFL.com. And Damashek says, I think there are about seven guys who are absolute locks to be on the list. And we're probably only going to debate two or three, maybe four guys who should be included. So he starts by saying, let me just get those six or seven quarterbacks out of the way so we can move on. But David Carr, the first pick in the history of the Houston Texans franchise, a guy who never lived up to that pick. He had other ideas. He had a bone to pick with one of the quarterbacks who Damashek said was a slam dunk as a top 10 quarterback in the Super Bowl era. Here is who Carr took issue with and why.
I don't want to be that guy, but like every time a quarterback list, all-time quarterback list comes up, and I mentioned the fact that Joe Montana is not in my top 10.
Not in your
panic,
top 10.
Panic ensues. And I'm from California. I watched Joe Montana. Now, I was a Cowboy fan, so I didn't necessarily cheer for the 49ers. But I also, I mean, I respect what he did. I respect more what Bill Walsh did and what he did for the entire offensive system of football, West Coast offense. I mean, that's everywhere now. I mean, there's Patrick Mahomes won the MVP because of Bill Walsh. I mean, I would say partly that because of what he did for offensive football. So Joe Montana, for me, did a very good job running Bill Walsh's offense.
Okay.
Steve Young did a better job. I would argue that the San Francisco 49ers were ahead of the curve, ahead of the defensive structure they were facing. They didn't face the myriad of coverages that even Steve Young faced. So I think that it wasn't an unfair fight because Bill Walsh was just a genius. He was excellent at what he did, and he created an offensive system, and Joe Montana was perfect for it. It was the perfect time. It was almost like the Brady-Belichick type marriage. Tom Brady and Joe Montana are very similar to me. They're talent-wise, they're very similar. I think Tom Brady's a better quarterback. I would say that Brady has kind of even gone beyond the X's and O's and what he's done. But Montana to me is a very average quarterback.
Oh. If you are driving in Northern California right now, I'm praying for you because I hope you didn't crash your vehicle upon hearing that. Joe Montana is a very average quarterback. David Carr, and I quote, he is a system quarterback who ran Bill Walsh's offense. A close honorable mention, a silver medal candidate for worst take in that 60 seconds of audio you just heard was when David Carr said, Bill Walsh won Patrick Mahomes the MVP award this year. Patrick Mahomes won the MVP award this year because he can literally make throws that no one else in the NFL can make. Did you see Alex Smith in that offense the year before? It was safe. It was predictable. Smith put up respectable numbers, pretty good numbers, but he was no Patrick Mahomes. Let's not make it sound like they're interchangeable parts when you're in a West Coast offense. You want to say Steve Young at his best was better than Joe Montana at his best? I could actually listen to that. But to say that Joe Montana was an average quarterback because the NFL wasn't prepared for the West Coast offense is one of the worst misrepresentations of football history I have ever heard in my entire life. In my entire life. It ignores the fact that Montana put up better numbers after Walsh left. Joe Montana had a higher passer rating after Walsh left when he was with George Seifert, and then those 2 years he was in Kansas City with Marty Schottenheimer, who I don't think anyone looks at Marty and thinks, well, there's a quarterback guru, there's a quarterback sensei. Marty Schottenheimer was a guy that wanted his running backs to average 3.4 yards a carry, you know, get into third and short every time, run it 50 times a game, and then lose in the second round of the playoffs. That was Marty Ball. Montana was a Bill Walsh creation. So he steps in as a starter in 1980, and it took what? 13 years for the NFL to get caught up to speed? It took 13 years for the NFL to figure it out. What a disastrous opinion. I thought David Carr might actually have a brain in his head, but maybe he was beaten up so many times as Texans quarterback, it took its toll, and he's not lucid anymore. Joe Montana, not a top 10 quarterback, says David Carr, because he's a Bill Walsh creation. My God, I don't even think Skip Bayless could say that with a straight face. Joe Montana had the greatest playoff run by a quarterback in NFL history without Bill Walsh. 11 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. His passer rating was almost perfect, 146.4. In those playoffs, his teams beat the Vikings 41-13, the Rams 30-3, and then pasted the Broncos in the Super Bowl 55-10. You know where Bill Walsh was for that game? He wasn't calling plays. He was eating Cracker Jack in the stands somewhere, probably next to John Candy. How about the next year, 1990, Joe Montana, 14-1 as a quarterback. How about 93, 37 years old, takes the Chiefs to the AFC Championship game, goes into Houston and beats Warren Moon in the Oilers, his MVP season. Come on. How much are they paying these guys to come up with this stuff? Seriously. On these shows, do they go into, before they recorded that podcast, did David Carr say, well, the only way I'm going to make this interesting is if I say something that is so patently and blatantly wrong, it's going to get us attention? Is that what we have as a sports media contingent, have we decided that that's the best way to get people to listen to our shows? To come up with BS like that? Joe Montana was better without Bill Walsh. He was a system quarterback. All he did was run Walsh's offense. Steve Young was better. Yeah, let me ask you this question, David. Montana's most iconic moment, he's got two. He's got the catch, a broken play, where off his back foot falling away, he makes a perfect pass to the back of the end zone. Okay? Let me ask, now, was that a Walsh creation? Did Walsh diagram that? Did he design that? Did he draw that up? A rollout, a guy's falling backwards, he makes a perfect pass for a perfect catch and a win. How about the drive to win a Super Bowl, 2-minute drill against Cincinnati? Was that Walsh? Did they have 2 weeks to script plays for a 2-minute drill to win a Super Bowl? Is Walsh going to get credit for him hitting John Taylor to win that game? Have some take integrity, please. That's all I ask. If you're going to come on national shows like this one, all right, have an opinion and actually believe it. There is no way if you hook David Carr up to a polygraph test, that he would believe that Montana's not a top 10 quarterback. Bill Walsh should get credit for Patrick Mahomes' MVP season. Let's just rename it. Let's do away with Lombardi, and let's just rename it the Bill Walsh Trophy for David. Here's an idea, David. How about you teach your brother quarterback to play a little bit better? How about that? You want to take? How about your brother's getting paid $28 million and he's going 4-12? How's that for an opinion? How's this for one? I'm not even sure your brother's a top 5 quarterback in the state of California right now. I'm not even a 49ers fan. I couldn't care less about that team. I just get so annoyed when people in positions like mine just plunk themselves down in front of a microphone and just say things to inherently get a reaction. They don't believe it. They don't back it up. They don't research it at all. They just say things. They just go to the nearest farm. They grab an entire pile of manure and they just blurt it out of their mouth. David Carr, if you can imagine this, he might be worse. His opinions are worse than his play. Coming up next, does Kevin Durant have to leave Golden State? I'm Andrew Filippone. It's the Pony Express on CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.